This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, Congress passed a $1.5 trillion spending package ahead of tonight's deadline for funding the federal government. We'll talk about some of the many things that ended up in the omnibus bill, including aid for Ukraine. Now, home-baked bread is one of the best treats, but between kneading and proofing and resting, it takes a lot of time and work, right? Our next guest says it doesn't have to. He says you can bake beautiful artisan loaves every day with only 5 minutes of active work time. You can join the Food Friday conversation at 800-642-1234. How often do you bake your own bread, if at all? Do you have a favorite kind of bread to make at home? Did you take up bread baking during the pandemic? Or are you like me and you think it's just too much work, even though it's yummy? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Jeff Hertzberg is the co-founder of the baking website breadin5.com. He's co-author of the latest cookbook, The Best of Artisan Bread in 5 Minutes a Day, Favorite Recipes from Bread in 5. Jeff, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, Rob, thanks for having me. This is fantastic.
Before we get into baking the bread, now you're a doctor who ended up being a cookbook author, and I guess NPR was part of the road from doctor to cookbooks. What happened?
Yeah, so I called into a radio show, 22 years ago on Lynn Rosetta Casper's NPR show, The Splendid Table, and an editor was listening and heard me bragging about this method I'd come up with for storing bread dough in the refrigerator for up to 2 weeks. And that makes it storable and it makes it easy for people to do. And basically it led to 8 cookbooks. I met a chef who was interested in doing co-authoring it with me, Zoe Francois, who now has her own TV show on the Magnolia Network called Zoe Bakes. So it's been an incredible, sort of a odyssey. I still do medical work. This was a really fun project I did in the last 18 years. I probably spent 5 or 10 of them doing this stuff.
Now, you just mentioned your secret, and you start this new book with the secret that's, you know, it's not a big secret anymore. It's on your website and everywhere. The key, because I think, I'm going to bake a loaf of bread. Well, it's an all-day project today if I want to do that. If we do some premeditated dough making, that makes it a lot easier. Talk about this basic idea that makes the bread baking easier.
Yeah, so the secret, if it's a secret, and it isn't anymore, is if you use enough moisture in the dough, if it's a high moisture dough, first of all, you don't have to knead it. And I didn't invent that. There are a lot of no-knead recipes out there. And they all do depend on a certain level of high moisture at a certain optimal level. It's not so liquidy that you need to do it in a pan or something to contain it. It'll hold its shape and you can use it for pizza. But it turns out you can store it. The basic white dough recipe, you can store for up to 2 weeks. The whole grains, which I make a lot of these days, the 100% whole grain, probably want to keep that to 5 days before it gets denser. But I like it. I like my breads dense, personally. If people don't like that as well, they can sort of don't store them as long. Also, you can freeze it. This kind of dough freezes very well. It's very forgiving. Traditional dry doughs they're not as forgiving. They lose their ability to continue to rise after a day or so.
But that fridge time is key. If I follow your plan, Jeff, I'm going to make a bunch of dough, more than one loaf's worth,
right,
store it in the fridge or freezer as the case may be, and then cut off a little bit at a time, a loaf's worth at a time. And then for that day, I actually make the bread, only 5 minutes of work that day?
That's exactly it. If you divide the time for that you mixed it and you only cleaned up one time and put it in the fridge, it is about 5 minutes a day of active time. It obviously takes about a half hour in the oven to bake a loaf, although flatbreads will bake in about 6 to 10 minutes. One thing I like to talk about is the only thing that really distinguishes this method is storage. And if you don't store the dough, if you don't kind of stagger your batches, it definitely doesn't develop that sourdough flavor that people are looking for. I like to use it. It really improves to my taste buds after about 2 or 3 days. Some people find 14 days is too long. I like it at that point. But it definitely does better if you store it a bit. So definitely do that.
Talking to Jeff Hertzberg, co-author of the new cookbook, The Best of Artisan Bread in 5 minutes a day, favorite recipes from Bread in Five. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions about this super top secret bread baking method? Do you have tricks of your own, a favorite kind of bread you like to make, or a bread fail to share with us? 800-642-1234 is the number. That's 800-642-1234. By the way, we've got some recipes from Jeff over at WPR.org/Food Friday, including the master recipe, the basic bread dough recipe. We'll talk about that in a bit. Let's bring out a caller now. Tracy is with us in Muskego. Tracy, hi.
Hello there.
What do you want to tell us about, Tracy?
So I just wanted to chime in and let you guys know that I actually became a sourdough baker just this winter. I had a starter that I had received from someone, and it was a dry starter, and I put it in my refrigerator way back when the pandemic started and kind of forgot about it. And in January of this year, I said, you know what, why not? Let's try. And we got it going, and the starter has been wonderful, and it's worked great. And we've had about, I don't know, maybe 5 or 6 loaves so far that I bake about once a week. And it's amazingly easy. And it's, I've actually, as I was waiting to come on, I heard your guest talking about the dough in the refrigerator. And I just this last week made a loaf that way, where I had the dough in the refrigerator for about 2.5 days before I baked it. And it did give a much better flavor, a little bit different. Huh. But it's amazing. And we're hooked now.
Tracy,
this is our life now.
Thank you so much for sharing that with us. You could share the bread with us sometime, too. Thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Jeff, I don't think you're going to try to talk anybody out of using a sourdough starter. If I read your book right, you don't so much.
Well, so it depends on what you want, how you want to spend your time. So our original recipe was a way of getting some of that sourdough flavor. And I won't say it's exactly the same, but you get some of that sourdough flavor without having to maintain a starter. Now, that said, in one of our later books, we did include a sourdough recipe, and we included an updated version of our version of true sourdough in the Best of Artisan Bread in 5 minutes a Day. And it's also on our website, which is breadin5.com, where I'm still answering questions myself if people have questions. There are also a bunch of troubleshooting tips on the sourdough, because until you get a little bit experienced, it's a little bit more finicky. It's definitely more finicky than our method is fail safe. They'll get it right the first time. Sourdough, I think, takes a bit of practice, but yeah, it's delicious. If you want to invest a little more time in it, it's not quite 5 minutes a day.
Thanks again for that call at 800-642-1234. Before we go back to our callers, let's check out the master recipe. Again, it's at WPR.org/Food Friday. It's that basic dough recipe you were just talking about. Talk about some of the ingredients on there. How fussy do we need to be about what kind of flour and yeast we use and that kind of thing?
So the answer is not fussy at all. It's a basic white loaf. It calls for supermarket white flour, all purpose, not bread flour, or you do need a little more water, about 1/4 to 1/3 cup more water if you use bread flour. You don't have to have it. And the reason we focused on all purpose was that virtually everybody has that in the house already. Bread flour creates sort of a more chewy texture, which a lot of people like. I don't think it's necessary. The key to the success of this loaf is the moisture. And if you use bread flour or one of the premium flours that's higher in protein, you need to use a little bit more water, 1/4 cup to 1/3. Actually, just to let people know, King Arthur all-purpose flour is a good flour, but it takes a little more water. And we have more about that in our the frequently asked questions on the website. Gives some specifics. It's also, of course, in the books. If you go to breadin5.com, questions, FAQs, there's an entry in there about flour varieties. It's number 6 on there. We give you a bunch of different liquid adjustments. But if you get a basic flour from the supermarket like General Mills All Purpose or the supermarket's brand of All Purpose, you don't have to change the water. It's just white flour, any kind of granulated yeast, salt, and we use a coarse salt if you're otherwise it doesn't measure quite right. You use a little bit less if you're using table salt, but kosher salt or other coarse salt, and then water. So 4 ingredients.
We're talking to Jeff Hertzberg, co-founder of the baking site Bread in 5. He's with us today to talk about his latest cookbook, The Best of Artisan Bread in 5 Minutes a Day, favorite recipes from Bread in 5. Find that recipe, the master recipe for bread dough, and a couple other recipes at WPR.org/Food Friday. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. What are your favorite breads to bake at home? Do you make a pizza dough or make lots? So much you have to make calzones, even if you weren't planning to. That happened to me once. Desserts, yeasted desserts. Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation. Maybe hear from you coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our Food Friday conversation with Jeff Hertzberg about his latest cookbook, The Best of Artisan Bread in 5 Minutes a Day, favorite recipes from Bread in 5. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your bread baking hits and or misses. Your questions for our guest, call 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let's go back to your calls now. Laura is with us in Kenosha County. Laura, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm calling about a nice little story for me. Well, not nice. About 20 years ago, maybe, I was at the library and I found Garden Way Publishing's The Bread Book, a very old book by Ellen Fesky Johnson. And it had a section in it about sourdough bread. And so I followed the instructions and I started making sourdough bread starter, and I had so much fun doing it. But then I forgot some in the fridge. So I went to use it and it smelled kind of off. But I thought, oh, heck, I'll use it anyway. But I didn't save any of it. And it was the best sourdough bread I could ever even imagine. And it was gone. You can't recreate it. You know, it's like forever. So,
Laura, can't you make a new starter and then forget about it for a couple of years?
You know, I don't know if it would turn out the same, but it's worth a try because it was wonderful.
Laura, thanks a lot for sharing that with us. Jeff, with your starter doughs or your doughs, it's kind of a use it or lose it scenario, right? We can't forget about it for a long time and hope to get good bread out of that.
That's right. But here's the thing. You usually can bring it back to life. And I'm not a big believer in the idea that there's some secret microbacterial culture that you had. The microorganisms that create that flavor and create that sourdough effect, they're actually in the flour. Flour isn't a sterile product. It's not really in the air. And the other thing that a lot of people have been sort of debunking is the idea that there's something specific about San Francisco sourdough or Alaska sourdough. You can make great sourdough anywhere. The microorganisms are in the flour, and you can usually bring it back. The other thing, what I usually do when I'm on a jag of making actual sourdough, I'll do a process called drying out, which is, I know I won't be able to feed it for a while, so I'll put a whole bunch of flour in it, as much as you possibly can, before it gets crumbly. And then you just cover that and put it in the fridge. Always leave a little airspace, by the way, because especially if it's in glass, it can actually explode from the fermentation, which we have a picture of on our website. Nobody was injured. That's good. But the glass did shatter. Frankly, you should use plastic. It's probably safer. You can always bring it back to life. And I think that the caller should try again. You can get that flavor back. I don't think it really was because you forgot about it for a couple of years.
Thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. All right, Jeff, suppose I've got my fridge full of dough to make my bread a day or however often I make it. Now, am I just like throwing a lump on and it's going to come out the shape of a bread loaf? Or can I take that basic master recipe and do, you know, funky forms and shapes?
You can literally do any of the shapes in the book, including pizza, including flatbread like pita. You could be sloppy. And sometimes when I'm in a hurry and I'm going to be using it not for company, I'll literally just take it out of the refrigerator, shape it very roughly, drop it on either a piece of parchment paper or a pizza peel covered with cornmeal, and it'll be a completely odd shape. And I kind of don't care for certain things. You can make a round boule, which is French for ball, the ball-shaped bread. You can make a baguette. You can make a loaf pan bread for sandwiches. The resting times are different with these. The basic bull is a 1 pounder. If you can go 40 minutes, that's great. 90 minutes of resting. This is passive time now. That's even better. 90 minutes for a big loaf pan bread to let it warm up and expand a bit. Now, if you're making a flatbread or a really skinny baguette, you don't need all that. You don't need all that time. You can go 20 minutes, or for a flatbread, it can be basically immediate. You can just roll it out, top it with pizza toppings, and throw it into the oven.
It's Food Friday. We're talking to Jeff Hertzberg, co-author of The Best of Artisan Bread and 5 Minutes a Day Favorite Recipes from Bread in Five. Let's go back to your calls at 800-642-1234. Ruth is with us in Eau Claire. Ruth, hi.
Hi. Thank you. I'm wondering what your experience is working with spelt flour, because we're having a lot of success working with it within our own home, and I find that it's just easier for us to digest it. We don't get, we have a little bit of sensitivity to gluten, and it doesn't seem to trigger that as much as like an all-purpose flour will.
And are you making bread with your spelt flour there, Ruth?
Yeah, absolutely. And muffins and whatever else, dumplings, whatever.
Thanks for the call. Glad you're enjoying it. Jeff, you look at a variety of grains in the book. Did you get into spelt?
Yeah, we did, but we didn't put the spelt in The Best of Artisan Bread in 5 Minutes a Day. It's a little bit more finicky for stored bread dough like ours. So in an earlier book called The New Healthy Bread in 5 Minutes a Day, a lot of our books, we have 8 of them now, have been responses to people who wrote in on breadin5.com, like the caller, and said, could I use spelt? And so we started experimenting with spelt, and we found you could do it. The gluten isn't quite as strong. There isn't quite as much gluten as wheat flour. And we do hear reports that some people who don't have great experience health-wise with regular wheat flour will use spelt. Now, be really careful. Spelt is a wheat variety. People who have celiac disease cannot eat spelt. But people who just don't like or don't get great sort of sensations from regular all-purpose flour have used spelt. You've got to adjust the water. We've got the adjustments in New Healthy Bread in 5 Minutes a Day. It's delicious. It's an ancient grain. Apparently the Romans were using spelt, not wheat, and all this sort of pizzas that came down the line in Italy were actually made with spelt. So it's a great product. It's not available everywhere. It's not for celiacs, but it definitely makes good bread.
Thanks for that call. We'll go to Lori now in Madison. Lori, hello.
Hi. I was wondering if with any of your recipes, if a bread machine can be used, or are bread machines obsolete now?
Do you have a, before you go, Lori, do you have a bread machine?
Yes, I do.
And you use it?
No, I have not in a very long time.
Maybe it is obsolete in your house. Jeff, your thoughts on bread machines as an option?
So that was one of the first things I thought of buying when I wanted to make homemade bread all the time. And it definitely works. People have asked us, could we mix the dough in the bread machine? The answer is yes. But then the question of, can you bake the dough in the... So our dough is very wet. And my only concern with the bread machine is that it's a closed system with a sort of a cover around it. And I worry that the moisture might not dissipate. We've gotten all different reports on that. Some people have said our dough works great. First of all, you have to make a smaller batch. Ours makes, because we're storing it and breaking off pieces, it's 4 pounds of dough. And I know the bread machine won't handle 4 pounds. Probably 2 pounds is the max. It'll take some experimentation, but it'll probably work. But since our approach was a way to, well, basically avoid the bread machine, we've never really tested it ourselves. But my guess is it'll work at least on some level, certainly for mixing the dough, a smaller batch. You can always break our big recipe in half if you don't need quite so much dough around.
Lori, good luck. We'll go to Carrie now in West Bend. Carrie, hi.
Hi. I am so glad to hear this author on the radio. I have his book, and we make his bread, and it's so easy. I am not a baker, and to rip off a hunk of bread and put it a little bit on a pizza peel with some cornmeal and have that smell come out of my oven 40 minutes later is incredible. So I love his method. So thank you for doing that.
Oh, Carrie, do you usually make like the master recipe and just go with that, or have you found a funky variety that you like?
We just used the master recipe. My husband loves to make bread, and I bought him this book. I had the book before, and somehow I lost it, but I bought it again for him for Christmas, and it took a little arm twisting, but that's the only kind of bread he makes now. We'll just add our own nuts and seeds to the master recipe. And we make them small, so because they're best when they're just warm and fresh out of the oven, and then they can be gone in a day. So we just make small little loaves, and they're wonderful. I love that method.
Carrie, thanks a lot for sharing that. Jeff, let's talk about adding nuts and seeds. Do you have favorites or recommendations on ways to get the most out of them?
Yeah, I mean, so long as you're relatively conservative, you can put just about anything in. In the basic master recipe, I very often, even whether or not I'm using rye, I'll put a tablespoon and a half of caraway in a 4-pound batch. But you can probably double that. You probably put a quarter cup if you really like it. Up to a half a pound of chopped nuts, especially with raisins, is fantastic in our rye dough. And we have a recipe for that in one of the earlier books. Best Of doesn't have that. Somebody's going to call in and say, which book should I get? And the answer is, it depends what you like. If you want to come to the website, breadandfive.com, you can sort of figure out. And we also can answer questions about what's in each one. The latest book really is a smattering of everything. And I just, only reason I mentioned this, it doesn't have the nuts and raisins in it. A lot of people like that.
Thanks for that call. And Jeff, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Rob. This has been so fun.
That was Jeff Hertzberg, co-founder of the Bread in Five website. We've been talking about his latest cookbook. It's called The Best of Artisan Bread in 5 Minutes a Day. Favorite recipes from Bread in Five. Hey, we've got some recipes that he shared with us. I'll find a link to the cookbook and those recipes at WPR.org/Food Friday. There's that master recipe for the dough. A couple more that we didn't even have time to get into. Pizza margarita, so how to make the pizza dough. And a recipe for what to put on top of it. And then a raspberry brioche braid. That looks pretty cool. A little more complicated. Find those all at WPR.org/Food Friday. Coming up Monday on The Morning Show with Kate Archer-Kent. What does inflation mean for your long-term money plans? A financial planner joins the program with advice and answers to your questions about how to deal with inflation. That's Monday morning at 8 here on the Ideas Network. Here's a public service announcement. Remember to set your clocks ahead an hour this weekend. This is really important for us on the radio. We want to make sure our guests also switch their clocks so they show up at the right time. Technically, the switch happens Sunday morning at 2 a.m. You don't have to stay up late to make the switch right at that moment. Saturday night or Sunday morning will do just fine. In fact, since we effectively lose an hour of the weekend, it's a good time to think about going to bed maybe a little on the early side. Unless you're really smart back in November and banked that extra hour of sleep to use it this weekend. I don't know how that would work, but if you figured it out, more power to you. About to become the other kind of Central Time, this is Central Time. Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up today at 6 on 1A+, McDonald's, Disney, and Coca-Cola join a growing list of major companies that have suspended their operations in Russia. Also this week, the U.S. bans the import of Russian oil. Hear about those stories and more on the Friday News Roundup today at 6 on 1A+. Now, President Biden is poised to sign the first major federal spending bill of his term. On Wednesday night, the House passed a $1.5 trillion package, which includes more than $13 billion in aid and assistance for Ukraine. The Senate passed it last night, ahead of a government funding deadline coming up tonight. There's a lot to get to in the bill, including increased defense spending and domestic programs. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Was this on your radar? Were you tracking any particular issues in the bill? What are your concerns? What did you want to see funding for? Were you hoping to see more COVID relief funding, more to help Ukraine, less? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll get a Wisconsin lawmaker's perspective now. Mark Pocan is a Democrat representing Wisconsin's 2nd Congressional District. He's a senior member of the House Appropriations Committee. Representative Pocan, welcome back to Central Time.
How you doing? Thanks for having me.
Well, this got passed ultimately a day before the deadline, not cutting as close as some of these have gone. How significant is that?
Well, it was supposed to be done by September 30th. So I don't know, last September 30th. So, you know, this is part of, since I've been in Congress watching this, you know, the budget doesn't get done at the end of our fiscal year. In this year, it went a little longer. But the good news is we did get it done. There's a lot of additional funding for things like education, healthcare, et cetera. And, you know, we were able to do a lot of things that help bring money to Wisconsin as well, and with community projects. So it's a good budget with a very flawed process.
Let's talk about something that's not in the bill. There's this attempt to add pandemic relief funding. Questions about how to pay for it, including taking some states, including Wisconsin's past pandemic relief funding. You were part of that debate. What did things look like from your perspective?
Yeah, so what happened is the Republicans unfortunately said the only way they would give any additional funding for COVID is if we used any unused COVID dollars. And there was a request by the White House for about $15 billion in additional aid. About a third of that was for vaccines for around the world, which I am very strongly supportive of. I serve on a caucus that advocates for just that. The problem is they took about $8 billion from some unused funds. But the other $7 billion was from 30 states, including Wisconsin. It was their second tranche of money that they were supposed to get. 20 states got it all in one tranche because of how the bill was written. And it wasn't unused funds. It's been allocated. It's just they hadn't gotten it yet to the states. And if we would have done that, Wisconsin would have lost $225 million. And obviously, that wouldn't be fair. California and New York got their money, but we didn't get ours. And you know, I was one of the, I guess you'd call, ringleaders in rounding up people from those other states, making sure they understood what would happen. So we still have to get a COVID bill done. Supposedly that'll be on the floor next week to get that additional money for the White House. But, you know, punishing a state like Wisconsin simply because that money hadn't yet been released, it's certainly not any of the state's faults. And, you know, they need to get the funds just like, you know, the big states got.
As I mentioned, there is some aid for Ukraine in this bill. What kind of things is that going to do?
Well, a variety of aid, including helping on some humanitarian assistance and other efforts. You know, we've got a lot to do. Most of what we've been doing, quite honestly, doesn't come in a budget bill. It comes in the actions you've seen President Biden taking. It comes in the actions of the sanctions. And those, I think, have been effective in moving forward. But, you know, it's heartbreaking to watch what's happening on the ground and not want to try to do everything we can.
In this bill, you mentioned some things coming to Wisconsin. There are what we used to call, I think, earmarks, and that became kind of a dirty word, you know, where the budget money is specified for particular projects in particular places. Can you talk about that as part of the process now? It hasn't been in a while.
Yeah, you know, if we're using a different term, I think it's community-directed funding, but you're right, it's earmarked. And the bottom line is, you know, we know our districts better than someone in a cubicle in Washington, D.C. And, you know, when there is a need, we know our districts and we should be able to get some of that funding. It was, I think, less than 1% of the overall budget came in this area. Much of this would have probably come in some other lines. But, you know, we were advocating for things like funding for the university and for local communities. And we brought that back. And I think it ultimately helps get a budget done. As well, even though we were maybe 6 months behind in schedule or almost 6 months behind, it did get done. And I think those funds are really key to getting that approved.
Before we let you go, Representative Pocan, this is a midterm election year. I'm guessing you knew about that. There are questions among Democrats, you know, just traditionally the party with the White House has trouble in these midterm elections. What do you see as a priority for Democrats as you talk to the public this year?
Well, you know, the two things that have been headwinds against us have been COVID. People have a COVID hangover, but hopefully we're now finally out of this. And the other has been inflation, which, again, has been a byproduct of COVID, largely, you know, with everything kind of reopening last year and production was across the globe shut down. You know, if you have a limited supply, they're going to raise costs, and that's been having an inflationary impact. And in some cases, I think oil companies have been gouging customers, and that's something we should be more aggressive on. But once you get past those two things, you can talk about what we did. I mean, for years, we've talked about an infrastructure bill. Democrats got it done, $1.2 trillion. We did the American Rescue Plan that put money in people's pockets and got kids back into school safely, got people into jobs. We've got a lot to talk about. I just think that people are you know, not quite listening yet, as long as they still have this COVID hangover and, you know, they're concerned about what they're paying for gasoline and what they're paying for groceries.
Representative Pocan, thanks again for joining us.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
Mark Pocan is a Democrat representing Wisconsin's 2nd Congressional District. We talked to him about his perspective on the House passing a major federal spending package this week, also passed the Senate, and pandemic relief funding that ended up being cut from the deal. Ginger Gibson joins us now for a look at the bill and the politics behind it. And you can join in, too, at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 with your thoughts, your questions about what was in this long-delayed spending bill, 800-642-1234, or email ideas at WPR.org. Ginger Gibson is Deputy Washington Editor at NBC News Digital. Ginger, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me back. Glad to be here.
Before we dive into this spending bill, you and your colleagues just had a piece out looking at what I just asked Representative Pocan about Democrats' messaging during the midterm. Not complete agreement on what that message is. What did you hear?
There's not a complete agreement. And really, this is a message that's been altered, changed in the last few weeks by Russia and their war in Ukraine. They were ready to talk about the need for Build Back Better, the need for universal pre-K, the infrastructure bill that they passed, and now they're talking about gas prices, and they can't figure out how to talk about gas prices. And they're talking about what to do sending airplanes to Ukraine. I mean, it's really upended things. And they're really divided on the message. Just on the domestic front, some lawmakers are saying they need more victories, they need more legislative wins, particularly the progressive or more liberal flank of the Democratic Party, that they need to be passing more bills, even though there's so much more going on. And some, the more moderate or the pragmatic wings of the party, say, look, they've already done a lot of things. They passed a historic piece of infrastructure legislation. They have passed the American Recovery Act, which they passed a year ago today, and then they need to go out and talk about those things and talk about them as victories and wins to tell voters that they delivered as they said they would when they were campaigning 2 years ago.
Now, Ginger, we have this new federal budget package, the federal spending package, as Representative Pocan said. It beat a deadline here, but it was really supposed to be done in September. There are all these little incremental delays and whatnot. This takes us through what, September now? What did it take to get this done?
Yeah, so this will take us to September, so the next deadline is only months away. And as Representative Pocan pointed out, they are behind deadline, but they're kind of normal behind deadline. They're like that grace window your teacher gave you to turn your paper in that you always used is kind of what they're in. They hadn't shut the government down, so I guess they're going to call that an accomplishment as well. But yes, so they've got this bill passed. It's going to keep government open through the end of September. And it's got a lot in it. It did several things that were priorities. This is also a trend we've seen in Congress. They have a hard time getting bills passed unless they tack them on to these must pass, as they call them, legislation. So one of the big things was they reauthorized the Violence Against Women Act. There's money in there for Ukraine, and there's money in there for the spending programs that they had already approved and felt that needed to continue going.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Daniel is with us in Madison. Daniel, hi.
Hi. I would like to find out if the child tax credit was included in this bill.
Daniel, thanks for that call. Yeah, there was that extension of the child tax credit that was part of COVID relief. It was part of what Democrats called their Build Back Better bill. Ginger, correct me if I'm wrong. I don't think it ended up here.
It did not end up in this legislation. So parents who were getting that cash payment from the IRS, a monthly cash payment to try to help offset some of the cost of raising children, they are stopped earlier this year. They are not going to get more of those payments. Now, the administration wants you to know, and I'll tell you, if you file your taxes, you get some of it as well once you get your refund back. It's built into that system as well. But it's not the like automatic monthly cash payments that we saw the federal government giving out earlier this year.
Thanks for that call. We're talking to Ginger Gibson from NBC News Digital about the spending package Congress passed this week, looking at what's in it, what got left out, how it came down to the wire. Again, call in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about what's in this spending bill, how it got passed? What's your response to seeing Congress include aid for Ukraine? Is there anything you would like to see more or less of? 800-642-1234 is the number, or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. We continue our talk with Ginger Gibson, Deputy Washington Editor at NBC News Digital, talking about the contents and the politics around the $1.5 trillion omnibus spending package that passed the House and Senate this week. You can join in with your thoughts, your questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. One issue, as you heard earlier from Representative Mark Pocan, was new COVID relief spending that ended up getting cut by lawmakers, including from states like Wisconsin, worried that past money was going to be stripped out of those states. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi talked about this a little bit when taking questions about the compromises on Wednesday. Here's some of what she had to say.
I didn't get what I wanted in the bill. You're telling Noah about the flood. I didn't get what I wanted in the bill. So I say to my members, yeah, that's a negotiation, and that's the way it is. And look at what is in the bill and what it does for America's working families, what it does for Ukraine, what it does that so much needs to be done, as opposed to what you don't like about the bill. So we will pass a bill that gets it all done, and we will continue to work on that. But as long as we need 60 votes in the Senate, members are going to have to know there have to be compromises.
Ginger, can you talk about the differences of opinion among House Democrats on that issue of the COVID relief funding?
Yeah, so there was this money, it was about $14 billion in COVID relief that was going to be included. And the Senate Republicans wanted offset. So they wanted it to be not new money, but them to get the money somewhere else. And where they wanted the money to come from was money that had been appropriated in the last COVID relief bill passed last year that had not been spent already. And some House Democrats were really upset about this. This was money that has been set aside for their states and their districts, and they felt that it was taking it away from their states, and they did not support that. And so there was a division. And ultimately, Pelosi said, fine, we don't want to offset it. If the only way we can get it is to offset it, then we won't do it. And they took it out of the bill. And so then there were some people who didn't like that approach, and they thought they should have just taken what they could get. And there was divisions, and there were divisions among Democrats. They also felt like they were giving Republicans something they wanted, which was defense spending, particularly in the form of aid to Ukraine. And they thought that those two things should have been offsetting, and they were upset that that case wasn't made. So Pelosi saying, look, I know everyone didn't get what they wanted, but this is what we had to deal with.
Let's talk about that Ukraine funding. It seems like there's a general sentiment in favor of that in both chambers of Congress. Was there debate over the amount? Were there calls for more, less? How did that all shake out?
Yeah, Republicans wanted more. So we typically think of Republicans as not wanting to spend as much money as Democrats, but Republicans wanted to see more money. Democrats had been pushing for $12 billion. Republicans had been pushing for $14 million at least. They were willing to go over that. And ultimately, they ran to just under $14 million. But this was one of those things, too, that I think we saw Democrats who historically are not big fans of funding war. You know, they're more pacifist, especially the more liberal wing of the party, than their Republican counterparts. And they were not crazy about the idea of putting more money into the war part. They were good with the humanitarian relief, but not the war. But we didn't really see that fight play out in open. They kept that kind of behind closed doors. And I think this is really an agreement among Democrats that the situation in Ukraine is so bad, that the humanitarian crisis is awful, and that the Russians are have invaded this country without provocation, that we saw Democrats, even ones that would not be inclined to give money to a war effort, willing to at least keep their objections to themselves.
Talking to Ginger Gibson, Deputy Washington Editor at NBC News Digital, looking at the new spending bill passed by both chambers of Congress with some bipartisan support. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Did you want to see more COVID relief funding come out of this? Do you think the U.S. is doing enough to spend on behalf of Ukraine to help them in their conflict after the invasion from Russia? Join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts or your questions. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. Ginger asked Representative Pocan earmarks. They don't call them earmarks anymore, but he says they're still earmarks. How big a deal is it that they showed up here in this spending bill?
I am one who would argue that earmarks are really important for the way that Congress functions. You send your member of Congress there to help your district. I mean, you want them to do things for your district. And earmarks, or they call them, you know, district relief programs or district funding, are the way that they get things for their constituents who are asking them to get things for them. They kind of got a bad rap when people were seen as using their power to get things that maybe they wouldn't have gotten had they not otherwise. But most of us send our member of Congress hoping that they'll do things on our behalf. And that means often getting funding for our districts. So they have made a return. They've made a quieter return than I think many thought they would, because members realized how important it was to have this. And I would argue that there's a little bit of the sort of real divisive political environment that we see in Congress. The real partisan, strident divisions have been because when you can't do stuff for your district anymore, all you're left to do is vote on really partisan messaging bills. And that has sort of stoked that division. So I think that we might find that the return of earmarks is not so bad.
Yeah, I've heard that from other people over the last few years, especially Ginger, that idea that if I'm in one party and the other party wants me to help them, but they don't have bargaining chips for me in the form of some little something for my district, why would I cross party lines to help them? Is this like a one-time thing, do you think, or are we going to see more of this?
I think we're going to see a lot more of this. I think we're going to see them stick around. And it'll be curious if Republicans take control of Congress next year, whether they keep them or not, since they were the ones who got rid of them. Maybe they decide that this is better. And keep in mind, it's not just bargaining chips from across the aisle. It's bargaining chips within your own party, particularly in the Republican Party. We saw Speaker Boehner and Speaker Paul Ryan have a very hard time keeping their members in line and getting them to do difficult things. We saw a couple government shutdowns because of it. And part of the reason people blamed was their inability to sort of offer something to get people to take votes they might not otherwise want to take.
Let's bring on another caller now. Nate is with us in Prairie du Sac. Nate, hello.
Thanks for taking my call. I'll be quick here. I'm a very progressive person, and I'm very experienced in politics. And it's a totally a misunderstanding of political reality for progressive people not to be standing right up as tall as they can with funding the Ukrainians, and to let the Republicans think that they can fund more than somebody who believes in democracy like progressives do. If we're going to fight for the vote here at home, we ought to be fighting as hard as we can with every dollar we can for the Ukrainians. They're on the front line of democracy.
Nate, thanks for that call. Ginger, what did we see from the progressive or left wing of the Democratic Party when it came to Ukrainian funding?
Yeah, I think we saw Nancy Pelosi make that exact argument today when she was asked by reporters at the conference the House Democrats had in Philadelphia. She said, look, the Ukrainians are fighting for democracy, and we're a party that stands for democracy, and we have a fight domestically over the future of our own democracy, but we also need to be working to perpetuate global democracy. And I think we're hearing that. I also think that, you know, it's impossible to look at the news or to pick up the newspaper and see the images and the videos coming out of Ukraine and not just be horrified at some of these images, the women, the children. You know, earlier this week, there was a bombing of a shelling of a maternity ward at a hospital. I mean, it was just horrific what we were seeing. And I think that has also moved people to make them, even those who would otherwise not be really crazy about buying anti-tank missiles, but it made them a little more motivated to do so.
Thanks for the call, Nate. In our last minute, Ginger, the spending bill is done now. What is on Congress's mind now?
I mean, now they're going to be looking at trying to get some of those Build Back Better pieces done. I think the next big order of business as well is confirming Ketanji Brown Jackson, the Supreme Court nominee in the Senate. So that's going to take a lot of attention. They're going to start hearings for her confirmation pretty soon. So they'll stay busy and then they'll go home and campaign.
Ginger, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Ginger Gibson is Deputy Washington Editor at NBC News Digital. We talked through today about what's in and what's out of the $1.5 trillion federal spending package Congress passed this week ahead of a what would have been a shutdown deadline tonight. Still time for you to share your thoughts. You can email ideas at WPR.org or tweet us at Central Time WPR. Coming up Monday here on Central Time, quality of life can play a big role in the economic well-being of communities. We'll check out a new report with advice for revitalization plans here in the Midwest. Also, mental health services can be hard to find and access from rural areas to big cities. We'll find out how a children's hospital in Milwaukee is tackling the problem with a walk-in mental health clinic. And have you ever seen one of those basement toilets that's just kind of there in the middle of nothing? Turns out it's a Wisconsin thing. We'll check out the story behind the freestanding bathroom fixture. That's Monday here on Central Time.